Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo. And, we are going to have such a nice afternoon. And it's afternoon here in the Pacific Northwest, wherever you might be. But I want to tell you, we're going to be talking about some pretty unique stuff. We have a fabulous guest today, Juanita Rose Violini, and she has put together a book that I think should be a must for anybody's library, especially if you want to regale people with stories of the paranormal, the unique. Her book is titled The Almanac of the Infamous, The Incredible, and The Ignored. Juanita Violini, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Donna. It's great to be here.
You are a woman that has such an interesting background. My goodness. You have a love of mystery, which I can totally empathize with. And you have run Masterpiece Mysteries and MysteryFactory.com for over 20 years. You have done murder mystery events. You've done parties. You've done all kinds of things, including writing, directing, and producing more than 24 murder mystery plays. And you're a member of Crime Writers of Canada. Wow. What made the magic of mystery appeal to you? When did you know that this was absolutely what you wanted to be involved with?
Well, there was 2 points in my life. One, I think I have always loved mysteries. I spent a lot of my youth in the library. By the time I was 8, I'd read all the Hardy Boy books, mm-hmm. any other mysteries I could get my hands on. And then in my early 30s, I realized just to get anywhere in life, it was important to focus on one thing. And so, because I had a love of mysteries, I decided I was going to put my attention on mysteries.
Amazing. Now, when someone would hear you say that, they go, well, what would you do? I mean, it's not like becoming a doctor. It's not like becoming an attorney. It's not like becoming an entrepreneur business person in the sense we typically think. So when you realized you wanted to be involved in mysteries, what did you seek out? What did you seek out working for a mystery house or a publishing house? How did you get started with your writing?
At the time, I was production manager for a themed entertainment company. Yeah, this was in Banff, Alberta. We had all sorts of theme nights put on at the major hotels. And through my experience with that, I really appreciated the mystery evenings that we put on, and I thought, I can do this so much better. And so I just started to branch out on my own and just focus on the corporate entertainment aspect of murder mystery parties.
Oh, how much fun could that be? Wow. You must have had all kinds of creative aspects you had to work with for the mysteries.
Oh, yes. There was the whole gamut was there. There was nothing like live entertainment to keep you on your toes, that's for sure.
I know what it's like with regular theater, but with mystery, you've got to keep people guessing and to have them figure out the who did what. And getting people involved, that can really be a lot of fun. What is your favorite show of shows that you've done with mysteries? An Agatha Christie?
Well, all the mysteries that I wrote were like Agatha Christie, and that all the clues were presented for the audience so that at the end, when you got the solution, it would be an obvious aha, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the actors would be improv actors, so a lot of the scripting was just what information needed to get out at the time so that all the evidence would get out. I think one of my favorites is the disco mystery that we have. There's a whole subculture still of all ages that just love disco.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's very big. That is extremely big. So that would be a lot of fun. Well, let's talk about your book, because I love it. I love all of the fascinating pieces of material that you have in here. Much of it I have read about before, but there were so many interesting stories, and you've managed to create a very compact writing structure with each one so that you have 365 stories in here, any one of which would make for intriguing conversation, and I would think a young person in school would have a great time with it. Anybody, if they wanted a conversation to start up with an interesting twist, start talking about ghosts or crystal skulls or, you know, all kinds of good things, which is my kind of conversation. I just love it. So I want to ask you, how long did it take you to compile all of this material? Because this is a lot of work, beautifully done, but a lot of work.
A ton of work. It took me 12 years in total.
Wow.
That was research, and I started working on the book, and I had my third child at the same time. So that 10 years was kind of going back and forth between mothering and researching.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Both jobs I absolutely love. And then once I had made myself stop researching, because it can go on and on, I took another 2 years to get it written and illustrations done.
Mm-hmm.
I gave myself a guideline of 300 words per entry, per mystery. So a lot of this is just the highlights of some very fascinating stories. I really hope if people find a mystery in the book that they really love, that they'll try and learn more about it, because it is a very interesting world we live in.
Well, the amount of material you had to go through to read had to have just been a bunch, a whole bunch. One of the things that you say right in the introduction of your book is that we lose touch with essence, and that's why that when we don't notice how we withdraw from the mystery, we miss it when it's gone. And I really like your statement as well, reawakening to the unexplainable, incredible soul of the world begins with curiosity and questioning, and that the magic is right here with us at all times in all places. And I really agree with that. Let's start off with the very first story in your book, The Crystal Skull. I can remember when I first heard about this years ago, and the story was just absolutely amazing. And the skull is still in the possession of a particular family, and they travel all over taking this skull with its mysterious lights and essence with them everywhere they possibly can. It's just as fascinating today as it was when it was first discovered. So tell us about that story. Because that took place in, and you coordinated these dates. That's another thing. This was discovered on January 1st, 1927 in British Honduras. And that's what you start your book off with, January 1. That's another thing that you did that was so unique with this book.
Yes, 90% of the mysteries in the book are on the day that they happened on. So that was another part of what made the research so intensive, was finding one for each day of the year. The Crystal Skull is a great opening mystery for this book. It was discovered by 17-year-old Anna Mitchell Hedges at the base of a Mayan temple, at the altar of the temple. She was on an expedition with her father, F.A. Mitchell Hedges, and they decided not to report the skull in the beginning in their reports as having found, and they went through quite a lot of different aspects to get the skull legally in their own name. It's a fascinating, fascinating artifact. Even these days, we don't have the technology to create something like this.
Mm-hmm.
The crystal skull is carved against the axis of the crystal, which would normally shatter it. So it's just all sorts of fascinating things. Anna had it examined by the Hewlett-Packard laboratories, and so they discovered that there were no tool marks on it. There's fiber optic type tubes in it. The jaw is actually not attached. Well, it's attached, but it's not solid with the rest of the skull, so that it rests in perfect balance, and the slightest breeze causes it to nod back and forth, and the jaw opens and closes as a counterweight. It looks like the skull is talking. It's actually, and this skull is one of the legend of the 13 skulls that will come together mm-hmm. at the end of the Mayan calendar.
Yes.
So,
and there
yeah.
is so much more to that story. And like you said, if anybody ever wanted to read up on it, it is just amazing all the way around. How it was discovered, how this teenage girl with her father out in the middle of a jungle spied it. Nobody else saw it, but she saw it. And I believe she's still alive today. I could be wrong. She might have passed away, but she's way up there in years, and she still talks about it, and people will come and see it, and it travels around, too. So it's amazing. Today is the 4th of November, and on the 4th of November, in your book, you talk about omens of the Pharaoh's curse. And this was on November the 4th, 1922. And we're talking about something I know everybody listening to the show has heard about, the Pharaoh's curse. But tell us a little bit about the story and the research you did.
Well, this is there's actually three separate entries in the book dealing with the Pharaoh's curse. It's such a big story. So it was in 1922 that Howard Carter and his patron Lord Carnarvon opened up the tomb of King Tut, Pharaoh of ancient Egypt. They were the first archaeological party to penetrate the entrance. And as the last man climbed back into the sunshine, a sandstorm was said to have sprung up and swirled over the mouth of the cave. As it died away, a hawk, the royal emblem of ancient Egypt, was allegedly seen soaring over the tomb to the west. It was said that the spirit of the dead pharaoh had cursed anyone who would enter his tomb. A few days later, after the tomb was opened, an eerie human-like cry pierced the air around Carter's house in Egypt, and it was the dying voice of his yellow canary that he'd bought from England, and it had been attacked by a cobra, even though it was still in its cage, so this was taken as a really bad omen. Over the next 7 years, 22 people who had been associated with excavating the tomb had all died prematurely, and this continued on. I think the last one may have been in the 1960s when a curator at the museum in Cairo tried to stop the exhibition from leaving the country. He failed in doing that, and when he left work that day, he was in a hit-and-run accident.
Fascinating stuff. Really interesting. Well, again, this is the almanac of the infamous, the incredible, and the ignored. Let's talk about January the 9th, which is the paroptic vision and sensory dislocation. Now, paroptic is a word that I wasn't familiar with, so I went, this is an interesting title, and this took place in 1960 in Virginia, where the teenage girl was blindfolded and played a game of checkers with a group of medical experts. She could see things through her skin. She read from the Bible. She'd point out objects, identify colors. Her father was the one that discovered that she was good at doing this, and he began to coach her in seeing without her eyes. Now, this is very significant because I know for a fact that you can be taught to see without your eyes. Our skin is a sensory organ, and I know this for a fact because I worked with a man, and I wasn't able to fulfill all the classes because he got ill and we weren't able to continue. But he taught blind people to see, and he had done it for years. But this story really grabbed my attention. And also in Russia, this was tested out with someone, and there was a blind Samoan that could describe the people who were coming in the 1700s. And I mean, there's all kinds of stories throughout history. This must have been really intriguing to research, because you have so many different points of information about people seeing without eyes.
Yes, it was a pretty exciting one to find when you start uncovering all the different abilities that we have as people.
Mm-hmm.
The seeing without eyes, actually, so this one is relatively, like all these, not all of them, but the young woman, that was in 1960s, which is fairly recent, and her father noticed her when she was playing blind man's bluff, how she seemed to do so much better than the other kids, and so he started to train her, and it was his encouragement and belief in that she could do it that really made a difference to her. There was actually a fellow I came across in the 1930s whose name was Kudo Bucks, and he was another fellow. He could see without his eyes. He would go to great lengths. He would have pieces of paper and cotton, like, put over his eyes, that he would even go to the doctors and get them to blindfold him with pieces of dough and then Band-Aid around his head and cotton and then, you know, more black cloth and finally putting a sack over his head, and they would just, like, leave it so that he could breathe through his nose. And then he would get on a bicycle and go riding through the streets of Times Square in New York, totally without being able to use his eyes. And he would do this. He would advertise his show that he would be performing in the evening. And his main objective was to really let people know that we have so much potential if we wish to develop it.
Now let's move on to ghost, Scandinavian ghost rockets. This was February the 26th, and the year is 1946. We're going to Helsinki, and there's a radio broadcast in Finland that is telling people to pay attention to sky phenomena that was going on near the Arctic Circle. What was happening there? This was an incredible story.
Yes, over months there was many reports to elliptical or cigar-shaped objects, even one was like a giant soap bubble, and that they would be appearing in sky in extreme numbers. Sometimes they would travel in formation and disappear into space with a rumble. They were called ghost rockets, but the reports went on for years. They were visible at night and in the day, often for only seconds at a time. But hundreds of reports began coming in from across Europe and as far as away as India. In Sweden, they witnessed them in the thousands. They even had Norwegian pilots who reported seeing the missiles traveling at 6,700 miles per hour. They'd be 25,000 feet up in the sky. Oh, yeah, and one fellow, actually, he was hiking in the forest and climbing on a watchtower. He managed to take a picture of one of them.
Ooh.
So that was pretty exciting. It got published in newspapers around the world. In the beginning, you know, people were saying, oh, it was the Russians, but then that theory didn't hold water. Occasionally, these objects they saw would crash into lakes. Sometimes they would sink. Sometimes they would skim along the surface. When the military searched underwater, they saw things like a crater or a ripped water plant just sort of showing evidence that something had passed there, but they never found any vehicles themselves.
Mm-hmm.
By December 1946, there were reports of almost 100 impacts, and they did find about 30 pieces of debris.
Wow. Well, we're moving along. I told you there was a lot of neat stories in here. I'm going to try to get in as many as I can. Let's talk about the butterfly mysteries, March 24. We're going to 1927. And it's about a very specific butterfly, the Red Admiral butterfly. Tell us why this story appealed to you.
Well, it's just kind of whimsical, and butterflies, you know, there was the butterfly theory that came up sometime in the last 30 years. I started to hear about it, where it says, does the flap of a butterfly's wings in Brazil set off a tornado in Texas?
Yes.
And the whole interconnectedness of the world. But this particular butterfly would show up in the girls' national school, and every year on the same day for 16 years, the teacher at the school, a Miss Clark, wrote about the phenomena. She had a lovely Red Admiral appeared again at the same window. The girls were quietly at work when suddenly a voice exclaimed, "Oh, Miss Clark, the butterfly!" So this happened for like 16 years. Every day it would show up.
Amazing. Just amazing. And, of course, you bring out the fact that butterflies travel thousands and thousands of miles, and many times the butterflies that leave South America, as they're migrating, they die, and it's their progeny that go on, and they've got this internal mapping system that is something that science just hasn't got a clue as to how it works. But they complete the cycle. They will go, like the memory is imprinted genetically, and it just goes on and on and on. And there might be three or four generations before they would get to a certain spot. So it's quite fascinating, that story. Now let's talk about some alligators. And this is on May 21, 1911. Oddly placed alligators. And this is about a number of different things. Alligators falling from the sky. How would you feel if something fell on your front porch? You hear the thunk, you go out, you find an alligator. Well, that's what happened with Mrs. Winchell in Evansville, Indiana. Well, they ended up killing it because they were terrified of it. But this is not a phenomenon that just occurred once. It occurred more than once. Tell us about some of the stuff.
Well, there was another alligator skyfall in the 1960s, and this took place in Long Beach, California. Mr. and Mrs. Tucker, they heard a loud thump and a grunt coming from their backyard, and they went out. There was a 5-foot-long alligator, and they had to assume that it fell from the sky because they heard the thump, and there are not reptiles living in that area. In Wisconsin, in 1892, a large alligator was found frozen in the riverbank there. In 1877, in South Carolina, Dr. J.L. Smith saw something fall from the sky and crawl into his tent, and it was a small alligator. Seconds later, another one fell, and in all, he found 6 12-inch alligators within 200 yards. That's kind of scary or creepy or something. You could just, hopefully you don't have a fear of alligators.
Well, they belong in Florida. Thank you very much. They can keep them there.
Yeah. One of the oddest placed alligators was in 1934 in a U.S. Navy dirigible called the Macon. Leading Chief Shaky Davis was wandering uneasily as the airship was crossing into California when a loud splashing came from overhead in one of the ballast bags. Afraid of a major catastrophe, he scaled the rigging. The splashing grew louder. When he got the bag open, he saw a 24-inch, very excited alligator swimming around.
Yes, and you
gotta wonder,
how did he get transported into that? My goodness. Again, these are wonderful, wonderful mysteries. They're so cool. Now, let's talk about Mrs. Guppy. And this is a June 8th story, and this is in 1871. This was a rather plumpish woman. Today we would call her a woman of size. And her name is really cool. Lizzie Guppy. Yes, that is a name of names. Now, believe it or not, she was the queen of spiritualist circles in 1871. And she found herself not just levitating, but actually being transported This was long before Star Trek was even thought of. And here she was actually experiencing it. Now, where did you find the records on Lizzie?
Oh, there were, I had a lot of reference books. I think the first one that I came across, it was in Unexplained Phenomena by Richard and Mitchell. And then when I started with books that were easily available now, I would go back as far as possible to the original source.
Mm-hmm.
So I have all my research cataloged. You know, if anyone was wondering where exactly the stories came from, they could email me and I could look it up.
Well, in the old-time spiritualist group, it's not so common today because the people aren't trained. But years ago, from what I was made aware of, that there were people would teach others how to do this, and that would be to materialize things. And there were things used in seances by spiritualist mediums like trumpets. They'd materialize gems. They'd materialize all kinds of things. And that's what she did as well. But she also, again, could do this levitation. And it's a fascinating story when you go through this. And then we have, let's see, on July 23rd. Because I know we're running out of time here, that's the city lost in the clouds. Now, this I have heard about, and apparently there's a couple of places on this planet where there are cities that have been seen, and for some reason they can't be found again very, very easily. And there's some that there's one that's supposed to be up in the Arctic Circle, and there's some others. But this one is lost in the clouds, and this takes place in the Andes.
Yes, and this was one of the lost cities that they actually had the good fortune to be able to find after much hardship and hunting. This is the story about Machu Picchu and how Hiram Bingham and his friends set out into the jungles to try and track down this mythical lost Incan city that they had heard so much about. So the mystery on this day, it does follow their journey, but we are still as puzzled today as they were then about the inhabitants and how they built these elegant granite houses. They had observatories, courtyards, fountains, and you're way up there at the top of a mountain.
Mm-hmm.
Just incredible. And then there's the mystery of what happened to the inhabitants. You know, all of a sudden it was deserted, and we have no idea why.
Mm-hmm. Right, and not only that, but according to the best-known research, the Incas didn't have any wheels, and consequently there was nothing to transport. And that is right at the top of a very, very high mountain. We had some friends that went to Machu Picchu, and they brought back films, and they said it was just unbelievable. And when they thought about all of the phenomenal building that had been done, it just literally took their breath away. They said that in their wildest dreams, they couldn't figure out how these people had accomplished what they had. Again, a mystery. Well, my goodness, I know that we're just about out of time, Juanita. Now, you have a website called theincrediblealmanac.com. Of course, you put the W's in front of it. All of my people are really savvy on the web, so it's incrediblealmanac.com. Now, what are they going to find when they go to your website?
Well, we've got some samples of the stories in the book. I've put up some color illustrations there, a bit about me. My wonderful, wonderful husband has made some book trailers, so they're up there as well. There's a link that you can contact me at, a list of events, radio appearances, book signings, lots of different stuff, a blog. I'm trying to learn how to blog, so there's a blog there, too.
You're far ahead of me, I'll tell you. I don't have time for blogging. But it's, I just think it's wonderful. This book is so delightful. If you wanted to have something in your library, where if you were going to an event, you said, gee, I need to have something really cool to talk about, you could open this book up, memorize or make notes about something just so you have the basis of the story, and then bring it up in a conversation, I guarantee you people will go, wow, their eyes will get real big, and you've got so many wonderful, wonderful stories, and it's backed up with research, and again, you can contact her if you have questions about where she got her research material. But this book is a delight. Almanac of the Infamous, the Incredible, and the Ignored. Juanita Violini, thank you so much for being my guest today. It's just been a joy having you.
Thank you, Donna. It's been a pleasure.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to come back in just a moment. More good things to share.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna. Telephone lines are now open, and if you'd like to give me a buzz, I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Here is the toll-free number for you to call, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. If this is the first time that you've had the opportunity to listen to the show, we're so delighted to have you join our listening family. And all you need to do when you call in is give your first name or your initial. I love to know where you're calling from. After that, you can just sit back and listen. I'll tell you what I perceive, and then you're welcome when I'm finished to ask me anything that you like. And remember, there's no such thing, really, as a dumb question. So 888-815-9756 for the next half hour, and you'll be able to get through to me. Also, I want to remind those of you in the Western Washington area, the state of Washington, obviously, that I'm going to be doing a special appearance in costume for a wonderful event. It's the Dickens Festival. This is its fifth year, and I've been invited back, and I'm going to be appearing at the King's Bookstore in downtown Tacoma, which is a major landmark, and I will be there from 11 in the morning until 4 in the afternoon. So I invite you to come on down, and if you'd like a mini consultation with me, that's fine. No appointments necessary. I take people as they come in. Also, part of the proceeds will be donated to the charity that is being designated this year by the group and organization that is putting this wonderful event together. So if you want to find out more, go to DickensFestival.net. That's DickensFestival.net, and you'll be able to find out everything that you need to know. This is a perfect event for a family. You have the whole day, and it's just going to be wonderful. Hot cider, cocoa, it's going to be nice and brisk out there. Last year we had snow. That was really something special. It was just magical. So if you want to come on out, do that, and you can check, and if you want, go and see my newsletter, which came out on the 1st, and it's already up on my website. You can go in and find out some more information there on my website. Just go to DelphiInternational.com and tap the button for newsletter, and the newsletter for this month will come up, and you'll see it right there. And I've got a wonderful, wonderful jambalaya turkey recipe. If you like spicy food the way I do, I think you'll find that recipe a delight to try. So again, give me a buzz now if you want to chat, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Animals, oh my goodness, they just are amazing. We have two Scottish Terriers, Kinsey and Victor. Victor is the talkingest Scottish Terrier we have ever had. This dog is so telepathic and so intelligent. He knows exactly what you're going to do even before you are going to even make any movement or motion to do whatever is on your mind. Extremely intelligent and very aware of people and situations. Kinsey is too, but she's sort of laid back. So I'm just always with dogs, I've always been aware that they have a very, very special way of communicating. Well, animals really are quite intelligent. And as we have become more sophisticated in our understandings about life, of course, animal lovers have always known that, whether it's a giraffe or a bird, it doesn't make any difference. We are aware that they have a life force and they do have a way of communicating. Well, cats have always been known for their intuitive capacities. They are absolutely amazing. And when people have cats, they'll talk about how they'll make certain sounds, and they have a way of communicating with their owners. And it is so true. They really will let you know if something is, you know, is wrong. And they've rescued people. They've just done all kinds of things. They're just amazing animals. And they have a way to touch us where we want to nurture them. They are just very, very soothing. Well, it has been very important for a lot of people to investigate the intelligence of animals. Some of this has been because they say we need to use them for research. How can we use them for research? Well, remember when the gorilla was able to do sign language, and we have dolphins that communicate in a very special way. All of these things. Well, they have found in the research on monkeys, and this came from Duke University, that rhesus monkeys do simple math problems nearly as fast as people can. They were testing two monkeys and 14 college students who had to add the number of dots on a screen and then press a button with the correct sum. Now, the students did score higher. The researchers found both humans and monkeys used the same mental processing to come up with the answers. Now, the students, they got 94%. The monkeys scored 76%. And they added a chuckle. They said they still got a passing grade. Isn't that something? That doesn't surprise me. There's been research that's been done on monkeys before. Crows, don't ever underestimate a crow. They solve problems. They are like squirrels. Squirrels are absolutely amazing to me. They're incredibly intelligent animals. But crows, they have found, do solve problems. The comment was, who would have thought Aesop's fable, the crow and the pitcher, would be scientifically proven? Now, what is that story? Maybe you've never heard of the fable. The fable tells of a thirsty bird who can't fit his beak into a pitcher of water. So he drops pebbles into the pitcher until the water rises to the top. You know that in Britain, they decided they were going to test the crows. And they tested four of them, presenting them with stones and a tube partially filled with water and a worm. This is what they found out. The birds not only figured out how to use the stones to raise the level of the water, they didn't even try to sip the water and get the worm until the right amount of stones were inside. They said, these birds are amazing. No kidding. Out in the wild, The crows have a symbiotic relationship with wolves. They, if they find a carcass, they go back to the wolf pack that might be in their area. They have an unspoken contract. They let them know that a kill has been made or an animal has died or is sick and dying. So the wolves go out, and what they do when they feed on the carcass, they crack the bones open, and the crows go after the marrow that's inside the bones. So they let them know when something is available for them to eat so that they can get to the stuff inside the bones. These are very intelligent birds. Very intelligent birds. Dogs have the same IQ as toddlers. They found dogs can do basic arithmetic just as well as preschoolers, and they count 5 to 7 or even higher. They say they are so intelligent, and I've known that for years. It is absolutely amazing. Stop and think of the dogs that are being used to research and are they're trained, actually, to detect cancer. There are animals that have never been trained to do that, but yet have let their owners know that something was wrong with them physically. Therapy dogs that enable the persons who are their caretakers, if something is wrong, if they're getting ready to have an epileptic fit, or there's something else that may be wrong, like maybe they're hypoglycemic or they're going into a sugar shock, the dogs will let them know. They will let them know. And I have found this happening so many times. They're extremely intelligent. Parrots, well, we know how sharp parrots are, but in Harvard University and the Neurosciences Institute in San Diego, they have found, no big surprise, Disney wasn't the only one that figured this one out, that parrots move to music. They thought that only humans could dance to rhythm, but parrots, when they listen to music, they bob their heads and they move in tempo. They don't miss a step. And they've tested this again and again. What about pigs? Memories? Excellent. They said when they taught a pig how to play, they found that they have the intelligence level of a 3-year-old. I think it's even more than a 3-year-old, but that's what they came up with. 3 years later, after they had tested some pigs and to teach them certain things, how to play with a frisbee, so on and so forth, and gave it a name and all of that, they could still distinguish the objects 3 years later, even though they had had no interaction with them. Surprise! I don't think so. And, of course, elephants, well, they are so special. I've known of people that work with elephants, and their intelligence is amazing. So the Emory University decided they were going to check things out, and they put a huge mirror in an elephant enclosure at the Bronx Zoo, and these elephants knew that they were looking at themselves. They say most animals, and even very young children, often do not comprehend that they're looking at themselves in a mirror. But the elephants knew. And they said it proves that elephants have an advanced sense of self, which means that they have the ability to truly care about others. No kidding. I wonder if these people ever go out in the wild and watch nature. They do this in a laboratory. You watch animals in nature and you'll find they care about their young. They care about their partners. There is an emotion there that is absolutely awesome. I think some of these scientists need to get out in the real world. In a lab is one thing. Seeing them out in nature is something else and something you never forget. Never forget as long as you live. Whether you're watching eagles with their eaglets or you're watching an elephant with its family, if you're watching even dolphins and whales, they're incredible creatures. And I'm always amazed at the photographers that are able to get the magnificent pictures that they get today. Our technology is just absolutely amazing. And the things that they find out today just take your breath away. Absolutely take your breath away. And it's just something I feel so fortunate that we live in a time where we're able to enjoy these kinds of wonderful, wonderful events and happenings that people are able to capture through the magic of technology. It's terrific. Well, if you want to have a little bit of magic in your life, give me a call at 888-815-9756. We're going to take a break for a moment, and then we'll be right back. Don't go away.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to DTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's T-TAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, ttap.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. Now, I want to let you know who's coming on tomorrow and Friday. We're going to be talking about multiplication and spelling with animals. My guest is going to be Susie Kuntz, and children need to know that learning can be fun. And when adults are aware of different tools they can utilize, it really makes such a difference with kids. And I think that learning should be a real joy. And again, in today's world, we have so many wonderful tools, and parents can be involved, and you can have fun with it. And that's what Susie's books are all about. So we're going to be talking about that. And then on Friday, to be or not to be healthy. What decision would you like to make relative to that? Well, Miles Schneider is going to be my guest on Friday, and you have the opportunity to make some choices. And I think it's so important for us to realize that. I think it's important for us to recognize we are responsible for our wellness. Now, I know life can throw us some curves at times, and we can get sick, and we don't stand out on a quarter beating a drum and say, suck it to me, suck it to me, suck it to me, I want to be sick today. But the reality is we have to be knowledgeable enough and be willing to be open to learn about things that we can do to make ourselves healthier. And so that's something that I enjoy with all the different people that I bring on the show. They each have their own particular paradigm that they like to present. And I think it's good because what works for one person won't work for another. So that's what's going to be coming up for this week and then next week. Oh, we're going to have so much fun. We're going to be talking turkey with Leo Pearlstein. Yes, this is the month where we're going to be serving a lot of those birds. Leo Pearlstein has been a guest of on my show every year because he has some of the most delicious recipes, and it's just a joy. He's been associated with the turkey industry for years, and he and a colleague teamed up together, and they just put all kinds of good things, and we're going to be talking about Cajun turkey. And this is something I've never tried before. It's something brand new. So Leah's going to share that with us on Monday. And then we're going to on Tuesday be talking with bargain junkie Annie Corzin. Oh, is she a hoot? This is a woman that could shop until she dropped and she still wouldn't spend more than $5 if necessary. She is a doll and you're going to enjoy her. Then we're going to be talking about the other kind of smart with Harvey Duschwenders, and he is a fascinating man. You're going to have to stay tuned to find out what that other smart is. Teresa Tapp is going to be joining us this month. This is a lady who has been on the road. I absolutely love having Teresa on the air because her exercise program, T-Tap, works. I've toned up 35 inches overall, no dieting. It is amazing, and I'm working towards dropping that next dress size. So this is really something that's quite special. So she's going to be on with us on Thursday. And then for those of you that know of someone that's dealing with Alzheimer's, with a friend or a family, you're going to want to listen to Susan Kohler. How to Communicate with Alzheimer's. This woman is so compassionate, and she has an understanding about it because she has dealt with so many environments where people have found loved ones that have been going into this patterning, and she is just a joy. So we've got a dynamic grouping of guests for the month, but that's just to give you all of the information for the rest of this week and next so that you can make a note. And you can always go into BBS and come right on into the Donna Sebo Show section, and you can tap in to the little brief descriptions that I give, and you can find out at any time at your convenience who's going to be coming up on the show if you want to do that. So that is right here on bbsradios.com, station 1. Okay, would you happen to have a pen and paper handy? I don't know about you, but whenever the temps start getting cool, and this has been with me for as long as I can remember, I love to start cooking. I just love it. I love the smells that when you come in from the cold and you open up that door, there are those wonderful tantalizing aromas, whether it is baking bread or cookies or there's a soup on the top of the stove. Well, a chicken pot pie is something that I think is just about everybody's favorite. And often it just seems like it's so much work if you really do it from scratch, the old-fashioned way. I mean, I've done it, and I've fixed them where they're, you know, in 13 by 9-inch pans, and I've done all kinds of stuff like that. Well, this recipe that I came across, I thought, made it really, really easy. And you can either, and this is made with dark meat, you can fix it with, you know, just regular chicken thighs you buy at the store, or if you're really in a rush, I'd say get a roasted chicken. It's already cooked. Use that. If you wanted white and dark meat, great. Mix your meat, but that would save you some time, too. Here's the recipe for the chicken pot pie. You're going to need 2 tablespoons of oil, 1.5 pounds of boneless, skinless chicken thighs. You want to cut them into, you know, 1-inch pieces, nice chunks. But again, if you don't want to do it, if you don't want to cook the chicken, get it pre-cooked. You're going to need 1/4 teaspoon each of salt and pepper, 1/4 teaspoon each of salt and pepper, 1 onion chopped, and I would say it comes to about 1 cup chopped, and I make it sort of a finer chop, and then 1 can of the condensed golden mushroom soup, 1 can of the condensed golden mushroom soup. You need 3/4 cup of half and half. 3/4 cup of half and half. If you don't have half and half, you have evaporated milk, whatever you've got. 1 butternut squash, and that should be about 2 3/4 pounds. This is a little bit different as a chicken pie recipe. And that needs to be peeled and cut into 3/4-inch pieces. That'll be about 3 cups. And then you need 1.5 cups of frozen cut green beans, and that's about a 9-ounce package of frozen green beans. And then have some fresh parsley. You'll need about 2 tablespoons of that chopped and 1 tablespoon of chopped fresh thyme. Use dried if you don't have the fresh. The fresh gives a different flavor. And then you're going to need 1 sheet of refrigerated 9-inch pie crust dough. It's already done for you. You don't have to roll anything out, really. And then an egg lightly beaten. Now, this is what you need to do. You want to preheat your oven to 350 degrees. And then you want to line a jelly roll pan with foil and coat 2-quart round baking dish with cooking spray. And in a skillet, if you're going to cook the chicken, you add the salt and pepper, cook it. Otherwise, just get your roasted chicken out. But you do want to cook up your onion. You want to cook up your onion, and you want to stir it until it's tender, about 3 minutes. Then your soup, your half and half, you add to the skillet with the squash, and you cook it until the sauce is nice and thick and the squash is beginning to get soft, about 5 minutes. You remove that from heat, stir in your green beans, chopped parsley and thyme, transfer it into your baking dish. Now, with your pie crust, you need to have a breadboard or something. You unroll your pie crust onto a lightly floured surface and put your whole parsley and your thyme sprigs on the dough and lightly roll it out to about 1 inch larger than your baking dish. And you want to press the herbs into the crust. You place the crust over the filling in the dish. Flute the edge. You don't have any bottom crust for this, just the top. Brush it with egg. Cut 3 or 4 slits in it. Put it on your jelly roll pan until the crust is browned and the filling is bubbling. You cook it in your oven 25 to 30 minutes and let it stand for 10 minutes before you serve. Yum. We are out of time. Oh, my goodness. It just goes by so fast when you're having a good time. I hope you've enjoyed yourself. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. Have a fabulous day. We'll be talking with you tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on BBSRadio.com, Station 1. This is Donna. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.